Maybe you should go and do some contemplating.
Right reason.
I'm the Bachelorette and I'm rapping to you poolside. Here to find true love, one man from...
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Rose Buddies.
And we just watched The Seed of Love and Life and... the soul be planted in the fertile soil that is a woman.
Oh, no.
Named, I don't want to give away the winner.
No.
That's not how we do it.
No.
But I did just watch the seed of love and life be planted in someone's fertile soil. That makes it sound like I've just watched an impregnation.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I watched an engagement happen. The 5-year engagement. You remember that movie with Jason Segel in it? Isn't it? And Emily Blunt?
Yes. It's a good movie.
I just feel... I'm just on cloud 9.
Oh, yeah?
I had a couple farmhouse sales, so I'm feeling pretty loosey-goosey. But also, it's not that. It's that I just watched the seed of love and life be planted in the womb of America's heart.
Oh, there you go.
In my heart womb.
So Griffin and I just watched the first 2 hours.
Making a ventricle baby in my heart womb.
We have not yet watched
the historic
after the final rose.
Okay, we
decided to record with our immediate reactions post 2 hours and then cut the ep and go watch.
I mean,
we
can talk, we can lie to you right now, we can give you some bullshit, but it's because if we record now, then we'll have DVR fast forward time that we can use for the back half of the. So, and it's also good because this whole season has been built around, is Nick going to be alone? Is Nick going to get jilted at the altar? Is Nick going to be very, very alone? And even up to the, like, proposal at the end, and then even past the proposal? Because Chris Harrison and, like, all of the stuff for tonight has made it sound like, but stick around, because anything fucking goes. And to give you a little bit of history, like, it is not unheard of that we get to the, after the final rose, and... most likely, like, the couple's there or whatever, and they talk about whatever, and they mention their Instagram accounts. But sometimes it's like, oh, no, we broke up. And sometimes...
Jason Mesnick.
If Mesnick's in the mix...
Picked his runner-up.
Said, I didn't...
Whoops.
Oopsie-doopsie. I made a bad one.
Yeah.
And so, we don't know. We're going to talk about the first 2 hours, and we're going to talk about what actually happened on the show. But we may come back after the old Jumbotron spots and... have a different story to weave for you. This love womb, it's a different seed in there. Maybe there's two seeds. I don't know. Looks like a maraca just shaking around in there. So many seeds.
Maybe there's half a seed.
Ooh, now what would that be?
Well, nothing would grow.
I'm dating Vanessa's torso. let's dive right into it because I always forget. Finale's mad boring, huh? Like,
yeah.
Because every finale is the two finalists meet or hang out with the family. It used to be meet the family. This is when they would meet the family, but now they get a little more loosey goosey with that.
And they drag out weird parts of it. So first of all, every finale takes place in front of a live studio audience, not the actual filming of it. But
no,
we keep cutting to Chris Harrison and wasting valuable time.
It's not wasting time. It's that they have 45 minutes of stuff.
Yeah.
Between like these two boring.
So they have an audience
dates.
Full of people, and Chris Harrison's sitting on a stage, and the idea is everybody's watching along with you. And they keep cutting to them to remind us that everybody's sitting there watching too. And then both women have to meet Nick's family, which was really quick.
It was very fast. Well, and that's the thing, that they went to Waukesha. So, like, they all met the family, I think, at this point, right? Or maybe not.
Well,
Raven had met Bella, who is Nick's sister? Niece?
Sister? It's like his youngest sister.
Okay. Oh, that's right. He's got a big family.
Yeah.
And so she's obviously got, like, it's a huge advantage, right? It's a huge chip in her back pocket. And you know Raven's going to play Bella's love for her. Very tactically, you know what I mean? She's going to cash in that card whenever it's most
Raven
valuable.
Raven is not a strategist.
I think she is more than you would assume.
There is no point this season where I have thought like, oh, ooh, well played, Raven.
Why is it? This was such a good Raven episode. Why is it that, like, and when they pulled the audience, like, first thing, they're like, who do you think's going to win? Who thinks Raven's going to win? And it was like, who thinks Vanessa's going to win? And just screams and howls. And then he's actually, Chris said, who thinks he's going to end up alone? And there were, like, two women who were like, yeah, fuck that guy. Which I thought was very refreshing. There was a lot of validation going on in there. But, like, this was the best Raven episode, I feel like. The whole time, I was just like, man, Raven's so fucking great.
Yeah.
Why is it that the finale is always, like...
I know. Well, because everybody's so sure. Like, they filmed the show so that you will be sure.
JoJo had the same edit, yeah. I guess.
But on the last episode, they want to bring just a little doubt in.
Yeah, so this is also sort of part of the tried and true structure at this point, in that everybody knows there is somebody in the lead going into the finals.
Yeah.
The underdog gets just, like, a really good edit. And, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know how they pull.
Yeah, because they want us to be a little doubtful, and they want us to have broken hearts.
They're really fucking good at this. Yeah. They're really, really very, very good. They have mixed results when they try to pull this fast one on us, but, like, this is one area where, like, the edit fucking works and is, like, they're very good at their jobs.
Well, and usually the runner-up is in potential contention for The Bachelorette, so it's kind of weird to watch this really good edit and just know that's the end.
Yeah. So the dates happen with the families and...
Yeah, so Nick's there with his parents, and I think there were like 4 or 5 siblings.
There were a lot of sibos.
There's like 10 in his family, and so it wasn't everybody. And the mom and dad remind all of us about the devastation he's experienced with Andy and Caitlin.
It was like they were at a wake.
Yeah, it was very somber.
So somber. And, like, it's a very emotional family, I think, generally speaking. Everybody kind of shares Nick's, like, penchant for, like, I'm going to cry in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Here I go.
You're going to see it coming a mile away.
They're constantly 5 seconds away from crying.
Yeah. So Raven arrives first, and Bella is excited to see Raven because they're old buds from the roller skating rink. Raven talks to Nick's dad, and she tells the dad, I am in love with him. And then the dad asks if Nick has said it back. And she says that he has not. And then Raven's dad finds that she has a maturity about her.
Raven, more than anybody, I think, this season, drops that do and that am just so, like, with fucking, like, thermonuclear force, just like, I am in love with you. Like, it's like a new plosive that she just kind of, like, injects in there. And it, every time, it's just like, it's my pet peeve. I think it's my pet peeve. I think it actually really bugs me.
You know what? People have asked why that bothers us, and it's almost like you're entering a conversation assuming that somebody has this on their mind already. So it's like if you showed up at your family's Thanksgiving, and everybody knows that you're like a big pecan pie eater, and you walk in, and they're like, oh, are you excited for Thanksgiving, Rachel? And I'm like, I am, and I am going to have the pecan pie.
Yeah, and for me, the bigger thing is this is an unscripted television show, and so the way that they get the people to say the words with their face mouths is they do interviews with them in those behind-the-scenes-in-the-moment interviews, and they give them prompts such as, like, what's your problem with what? Do you think Korn has enough maturity to be here? Or, you know, whatever. And so when you give that, how about the term sharp affirmative is how it hits me. When you give that sharp affirmative, it kind of, like, shows that there is somebody like, are you in love with Nick? I am in love with Nick. Like, it's just like, obviously, like, I don't know. I think that's why it bothers me. And also just like, if you don't understand why it bothers us, say it with your mouth right now. Say it right now and feel how weird it feels. I do love you, Rachel. The only way that makes sense is if you're like, if you just say I didn't, and I have to, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unprompted.
Like, just Griffin, like, there's no way you're in love with me.
I do love you. That's fine. I mean, it's not fine. Jesus, please. Don't say things like that to me. It makes me very sad. But otherwise, just being like, if the first time I told you I love you, I said I do love you. You'd be like, why are you so insistent about it? Fine. Calm down.
Yeah. Raven also talks to the mom, and she tells the mom about how effortless their relationship's been.
Couldn't even learn her name.
I don't know.
Shameful.
And she uses phrasing that she used with Nick, I feel like, the first time she revealed her feelings to Nick. Because she says, it would be tragic if I didn't express how wonderful he is. And I feel like that's the same thing she did when she told him that she was in love with him. She was like, it would be tragic if I left here. So that was interesting. And Raven has a good experience with the mom, and the mom says that she seems very honest. And
we are just scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I mean, it's real quick. One thing I will say, this is when Nick and his mom are talking, and his mom's like, you know, you felt this way with Andy and Caitlin. How do you know? And Nick goes like, I don't. Remember? And you thought
I
did. Really
I laughed at him. Yeah. I mean, that's
funny.
That Wisconsin coming through. And it comes through sometimes. I think it's very, very charming.
And then he does the, like, she's funny, smart, attractive.
Yeah, this fool unpacks his adjectives pretty often. And that's another thing that I didn't realize until this episode that he does. Like, Rachel, you're smart, cute, funny, attractive, cool, crazy sexy, cool, crazy beautiful. But I gotta send you home. It's like always like,
yeah,
you're fine, fierce, lovely, strong, powerful, muscular.
What if he did like an acrostic poem?
That's it.
He's like, radical, awesome,
very
vivacious.
Rare, very awesome. Energetic. Nice.
Nice.
Nick only speaks in acrostics. If you go back and watch the whole season, every sentence he says, if you really look at it.
Corinne was a really long one for him.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Vanessa, too. It's quite a bit, quite a bit of stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let alone the ladies that have he had to give the last initial for. It's just like a whole, you know?
Uh-huh.
If you go back, it's the whole season. Yeah. Every sentence.
Rewatch the whole season.
Go
right
rewatch
now.
The whole fucking season. I would rather go jump in a river and stay there.
Well, yeah, I would too. Jumping in a river would be fun.
No, I mean like forever.
Oh.
Yeah, to be taken as the river's bride.
And the river would be like, Riffin, I am in love with you.
Mm-hmm. So then
Vanessa's turn.
Yeah, all right.
Vanessa's turn. So Vanessa shows up and she sits down with the family and she tells her story and about kind of who she is, where she's from. And then she tells her vomit story. And then she says that's how she knew.
Yes.
She was in love with
Nick. She starts to get choked out. She's like, and I yartsed and I got all over my suit and my pants and hair, and I ruined a camera and several takes because they can't show yartsed.
She says that's when she realized that Nick was a caretaker.
And then that's when I like could not go on thinking about her yartz accident that she had. Now, I will say this to Vanessa's credit. She said, we went up in an airplane. That made it feel like you were going up into space. And
yeah,
I wanted
finally.
To go. I want to like tweet. I never tweet at the people on the show, but I want to be like, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for this. This is such a major step towards the light.
For acknowledging that you didn't actually go into space.
Because like four times.
Yeah.
Her and Nick. We went into outer space to Uranus. You didn't. I promise you didn't. You went on a goofy plane that did silly tricks up in the clouds.
So she tears up while she's telling this vomit story. The mom tears up too. And then Nick does kind of a calming thigh rub on Vanessa.
Man, you could more easily number the stars than you could count the thigh rubs in this 1-2 hour of... And also the women lift. There's lots of women lifting. Lots of lifting up
okay,
women.
Okay, so this is the joke I came up with.
Oh, boy.
But I didn't say anything to you because I wanted to bring it to the podcast.
Cool. I'm excited. This never happens.
What if the lady showed up at Nick's house and everybody in the family hugged like that? It's like a Saturday Night Live sketch. Like they all hug each other and Nick lifts each of them up and they all wrap their legs around him.
That's really good.
Isn't that a good image?
Do you know what I thought about that?
Including the dad. Like
yeah.
The dad brings the legs up around Nick.
Come here,
how
great
Nick. Would that
be? You know what I thought about that I wanted to talk about on the podcast, and I do not know if it will play here, but it's one of the funniest things that I've ever like had watching TV with you. Was we were watching and there is a commercial. My favorite thing about like the live threads is like people comment on the commercials. They're like, boy, that Ghost in the Shell movie looks shitty.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's depressing, but yes. And the one, there's one where this middle-aged woman is like getting ready for a date and you see her son playing video games. And then she's like walks over and like interrupts his game and is like, are you sure you don't eat anything? You sure you're fine? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine, Mom. Mom, go ahead. Go ahead. And she's like, okay. And starts to leave. And he's like, Mom, no kissing on the first date. And she kind of smiles and walks out. And it's like pretty like weirdly overbearing. Like, that's no good.
I don't even remember what it's an advertisement for. Is
it like Match.com? It's like for something? Yeah, for overbearing young boys. It's a school for overbearing boys. Anyway, before this came on, before this commercial, immediately before it, Rachel and I watch everything with closed caption now, because we watch all our TV with like the volume set to 6 out of 100 because we don't want to wake up our child in the other room. Right before this was a Truth ad, the anti-smoking campaign. And somehow these closed captions got fucking devoured. And so there was just a fraction of a word and then a word and then like a typo word with like a hieroglyph. Just thinking about it makes me want to fucking crack up because what it said on the screen was backo, tack, tack, tobacco. And what we thought was the fucking funniest mental image ever was like, no kissing on the first date, Mom. And she just turned to her rotten son and was just like, tobacco, tack, tack, backo. Mom, please, backo. Backo!
it's a lot of explanation for something that may
please
not
translate.
Please
just don't kiss tonight. Backo! Tobacco! Tobacco!
I hope that's funny to other people.
God, it was the hardest I think I've laughed in a year. A calendar year, it was the hardest I've laughed.
The lesson is watch the closed captions.
Backo!
Like, tonight, when Chris Harrison came on screen, our closed captions said Chris Marrison.
Yeah.
Like, we wouldn't have gotten that.
There's a lot of humor to be found in these silly closed captions. Okay. Just her turning towards her son, unhinging her jaw, and just shrieking, Becco!
You've got to stop doing that. I don't want you to wake up Henry because you're saying
Becco. If I wake up Henry, I will go into the bedroom and lower my face over the crib, and I will shout tobacco at him as loud as I possibly can. I won't do that.
Please don't.
I would love him. I won't spook him.
Okay.
Also, he'll never sleep ever again if I do that.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's a barn owl outside or something. I heard it. It wasn't a baby. It was a barn owl.
Okay.
We live in Texas. We got barn owls.
Okay. So Vanessa talks to the mom and says that she's never felt this way before. And she's never been in the position where she's about to get engaged, potentially. And so it's a big deal to her. And she worries kind of whether they're rushing. And she's got some kind of hesitation. And the mom is kind of like, well, you know, this is serious. Like, this is a serious thing. And then she also tells the sister the same thing. She's like, you know, no one in my family has ever left Montreal. This is kind of a big deal if I were to move. And the sister says, well, you really should talk to him about this. So I was kind of surprised because Vanessa basically comes in and is just like, I am really unsteady. And Nick's family, of course, is like, ugh.
I mean, yeah. But also, like, we don't know what conversations they had outside of this.
Yeah.
But not only that, this is more conversations about logistics. That's all this is.
No, that's true.
Any friction that popped up here was like, I'm really thinking about what it's going to be like to be with this dude after this. And the family was very much playing along.
The dad has a really interesting convo with Nick, which is another one of those, like, serious, this is the actual one you're picking kind of conversations. Because he's like, you know, I remember when you and Andy didn't work out and you feel like Andy had a type and she went back to that type by not picking you and that she made the wrong choice. And Nick, you have a type and I'm wondering if you're going to put yourself in the same position, basically acknowledging the fact that like Vanessa is very much his type and that if he continues to pick his type, he's going to end up hurt. Which I hadn't really thought about how similar Vanessa was, both in appearance and kind of demeanor
yeah.
to Andy and Kaylin. But she very much is.
I think that's fair. Yeah. It's certainly more so than Raven.
Yeah.
And Nick is very like...
Yeah, like, oh, I like complicated, strong women.
Okay.
You know how Nick says.
I know the things he says.
Yeah. And this is when Vanessa has a very emotional conversation with Nick's dad, where she asks dad specifically,
He's your dad now.
Yeah.
Sorry, David. You've been replaced.
Asks Nick's dad if love is enough, that she loves him, and is love enough? And he says, well, no, you have to sacrifice, and it's commitment, and it's selflessness. And right around here, dad gets choked up.
Yeah.
Gets a little choked up. And then Vanessa also gets choked up. They have a little
call and response.
A little tear moment.
It's sweet. I forget why. I don't really understand why.
Well, Nick's dad is talking about love, and it makes him emotional because I guess he loves his wife a lot.
No.
And then Vanessa feels very strongly for Nick, and that makes her sad.
Do you wish that when we talk on this podcast about like our relationship and my love for you, that I would just cry 100% of the time?
Well, I mean, not if you made that noise. You could silently cry.
Okay. Just assume when Rachel's talking and I'm not, that I'm silently crying.
Yeah, please. Okay. Please do. okay. Silently cry.
This is as silent
as
I can.
Why are you crying?
Because it's love.
Love, yeah.
Because I've sacrificed so much for you.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
I've sacrificed my looks. Bacco!
And so the mom and dad talk to Nick, and again, they remind him of how certain he was with Andy and Caitlin.
There's so much. It's almost like that's the only thing that anybody talked about the entire season. And yeah. It's like they had a fucking quota to fill that they were off by 15. And so it was just like, you remember the past couple times you fucked up? And by the way, sorry to Jennifer? His bachelor
in Paris? I think it was just Jen.
Jen? Sorry, Jen. Like,
yeah.
Nobody buys it. Yeah. You've been written out of the narrative.
Yeah.
Eliza Hamilton style.
And then we're back to the studio.
Yeah.
And those were the family meetings. And so it's time for the lady dates now.
Mm-hmm.
And Vanessa goes first. And I made these notes, which is kind of not necessary, but I always wrote down Vanessa in the snow. And then I wrote down Raven in the snow as if...
No, it's all in the fucking snow. Yeah. It's not only that, it's all in the same, like, what is it? It's called something safari?
Lapland
Safari?
I think it's where they're staying. It's like the resorts where they're staying.
And so either there weren't like a lot of places to shoot, or also it was like fucking 5 degrees outside. So they just did not want to go too far from their hotel.
So Vanessa and Nick are going to get on horses. And this is where I made note of the crotch cam, which was the camera they put on the saddle that looked up at them from crotch level.
Yeah.
And this is also when they show a man in red.
Oh my God. Okay.
Hiding behind a tree.
With no warning. Like, you guys gotta fucking warn me if you're gonna take it to this place. You can't just have these two having a horse date, and I'm watching this thinking, this is gonna be like any other horse date. And then who's that woodland nymph popping his head out from behind the spruce? Why, it's old Saint Nick.
Because of the weird angle, I thought there was kind of like a Blair Witch quality, where it was like this bouncy camera at crotch level, and then this like Santa Claus in the trees. I thought there was going to be something weird that was going to go down.
And all of a sudden, I'm like, now my blood pressure's elevated, because now nothing that happens from this point and the point in which the Santa Claus is addressed, like, can I focus on anything these two are saying about the relationship or romance or whatever the fuck? You can't be like, I know, it's tough. You know, I've been in this position too. I got jilted by Andy and Caitlin, and it was like, no, get to the Santa Claus that you did definitely show.
And so then the Santa Claus disappears, and they ride for a little bit longer.
He
walks behind a
tree. You're making it sound like he has like actual spriggin' magic.
Well, I thought as they approach the tree he jumped behind, that they would interact with him. But instead, they continue to ride.
You think he used woodland magic that the nymphs taught him? That's some Finnish dryad.
I thought he was going to hop out at him when they rode by.
Scare the horses very bad.
Yeah. Instead, they go up to this cabin, and that's when I realize, oh, they're going to Santa's little Finland cabin.
I can't believe the words were said. I can't believe what we're talking. I can't believe what we watched about.
I know. It felt like a weird holiday episode of a sitcom, but hey, it's March. Like, this is weird.
I don't even think it was around the holidays when they filmed this.
No. And so they sit in this tiny, warm, like, fire shed with Santa. And
very small.
And, by the way, I made the point to Griffin that if somebody could rework our theme song, so there's a line that says, she ends up with Santa Claus instead of Soulja Boy.
Yeah, that would be fun. That and then if fun. It's somebody's first episode, they'd be like, what the fuck is this podcast, Dylan? Why did you tell me to listen to this, Dylan?
So Vanessa is very excited to see Santa Claus, but you can tell she's putting it on a little thick. When she says that she really, quote, feels like she's back in her childhood days.
And it's like shows her like just like laughing and like burying her head in this, I'm sorry, Finnish mole Santa's shoulder. Like,
it's like,
I love Christmas very, very much. Santa Claus, yes, go for it. But she's on this like, I think Santa Claus in this moment to me represents you got to have faith in something bigger than yourself. And that's like the faith that I have in Nick.
I know.
And it's like,
ooh,
what the fuck?
That was so tough. Yeah. It's like if Griffin and I went to go get ice cream and I was like, oh, Griffin, thank you for taking me to get ice cream. I feel like I'm back in my childhood days when I would get ice cream.
It's so, there's so much that went on in this one little, and then they just like, oh, he gives them a weird
sex plate.
He gives
them a gift. Yeah, it's like a wood carving of the two of them with, I guess, their Finnish names, which are Nico and Venla. And there are symbols for happiness and fertility on it.
So he's like, go do it.
Yeah.
Go plant your fertile seed in the life womb or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they go outside and they sit by a fire and there's this hysterical shot of that wood carving from behind
right
the other side of
the fire. Yeah.
Which definitely made it look like, thank you, Saint Nick. I'll treasure this forever. A burn.
And then they have another, like, one of many serious conversations about their future together. And Vanessa makes it clear that she's kind of upset that Nick is still hedging. And she's like, I don't want to be, you know, chosen because we have a slightly stronger relationship than the other person here. And she talks about her gut and how she's ignored her gut in the past. And how she has all these questions still left unanswered and all these doubts. And
there's two ways that you handle this in the game. And the first is you do what the Axeman Ben Higgins and what JoJo did, which is you just tell the final two people, I love you. I fell in love with you a long time ago and I love you before the proposal or whatever. I love you. The other way you do it is how Nick did it. And I think he did this in a bad way. In that he said, y'all, in dancing around reciprocating the feelings of these women, Nick says, some shit.
Yeah, it's at its worst with Vanessa.
As it always is. As these, like middle-of-the-road statements are always the worst with Vanessa. Because I think she wants this She wants this reciprocation very badly, and I think Nick also very badly wants to give it to her, but can't and doesn't. And so just the result is some really bad stuff.
So here's what happens. So at night, they meet up again, and Vanessa just wants to get questions answered. And so she says, you know, I feel like your answers to my questions have been very general so far. And Nick says that he's being more careful with his heart this time around. And Vanessa just flat out says, do you feel ready to propose? And Nick responds, the week's not over yet.
Are you fucking kidding, dog?
Like,
that's the best you've got?
Like, I can't. That is so upsetting.
Later in the episode, he says, when I made my decision this morning...
Yeah.
At the proposal. And then he said, this was a heartbreaking decision to make.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking deciding on who your fiance and wife is going to be.
Yeah.
Broke my heart. Rachel, when I proposed to you, it was a heartbreaking decision, you know? Because there's just a bunch of other people. It could have been, but it was you. And it's just, I'm so happy. But it broke my heartbreaking decision.
By deciding to get engaged to you, I had to reject other situations which might have made me happier. Like, what kind of proposal is that?
What kind of way to say things to a person is that? There's a lot of game left to play. What? Are you going to marry me or the other woman? I don't know. We're still in the first quarter. What?
I feel really strongly about you, but everything could change tomorrow. Depends.
So don't get comfortable. Like, holy shit, dog.
Raven and I are going to ice skate, and if things get hot, I might feel differently about you.
You better hope for a miracle. Like,
yeah,
we're exaggerating a bit, but it was the things that he says are like, and I get what the structure of the show demands, but like the things that he says to a person that could be his future fiance are unconscionable.
Yeah. Vanessa like really starts crying pretty hard.
Yeah, very bad, very
and
hard.
Nick's kind of like, I know what you want and I just can't give it to you.
I could give it to you. But I don't want to until, because once I propose, it's marriage.
She talks about how, like, it's not especially romantic the way...
Just winning. Like, winning over another person is not romantic, which I fucking get.
And he's like, but isn't it romantic that I want to wait to say I love you to the one person that I know that I'm going to be engaged to? And it's like, Nick, come on.
Out of two? The one out of two competitors?
Yeah.
No, that sucks.
Like, any doubt that you claim to have at this point, like, she can very clearly visualize the source of that doubt. It's not like when there were 30 women. It's like, I know who it is.
I usually have no patience, too, for, like, competitors at this point who, like, don't understand what the structure of the show is, who are like, I need you to propose to me right now. It's not going to happen. It has happened. And I think Vanessa, like, everything she said in this conversation was she was trying to get that sort of... a fairly unprecedented thing of just like, just say it now.
Yeah.
Just tell me now. Just propose to me now. Go send Raven home and let's do it right now. I usually have no patience for that level of like not understanding and understanding what the structure of the shit is. But like, maybe it's just because Nick was just so fucking bad at this that I felt so bad for Vanessa.
Well, it seems like he's picking the show over her because she so desperately wants something. And he's like very clearly tied to the producer saying like, well, you know, I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, and you made a great point when we were watching in that, like, pretty much every season, every proposal starts with, I knew from minute one.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. You can't say, like...
I've been falling in love with you from the very beginning. It's like, well, wait a minute.
You can't say in one day, I'm going to play this thing till the fucking whistle blows. And then the next day be like, from the moment I saw you step out of the limo. No.
Yeah. Okay, so time for Raven's date. And they are going ice skating. And they play Kiss Me again because Raven acknowledges our first date was roller skating and here we are again skating.
Yeah.
And so they decided to reuse that song.
Yeah.
which Griffin asked me, he's like, do you know who sings this song? And I just without, I mean, come that, on, that's everyone more, knows
that's
who sings
more based
this song.
On like, you and I have certain divides in like, you know lots and lots of things. What was the thing? We were watching Buffy. Rachel and I were rewatching Buffy.
Oh, Case Choice.
Case Choice, like, was on, and I thought it was Amy Mann, which I was way off base there. But you're and like, I you know, Case Choice, and you sang, like, a whole Case Choice song. And I was like, I've never even fucking heard this song, this band, this...
Well, Sixpence on the Richer, that song came out when I was in high school.
Right. I think that's one of those songs that, like you and I both caught.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wasn't trying to like doubt your abilities. It's like I don't know where our there's a break for you and I where there's like any songs before a certain point and after a certain point, like one of us knows and the other one doesn't.
But Kiss Me,
Sixpence is right in the fucking
brings us together.
Splits the uprights of our.
It's a real American Tale moment where I was driving around in my car listening to that song, and then what were you doing?
I was just getting my diaper changed. No, let's see. I was probably, you know what? Ironically, I was probably at Kamak Middle School fucking going to Rollerama and like, sorry, babe, probably holding hands.
Oh, Griffin.
I know. With my teacher who was teaching me how to skate. You're the first hand I ever held, babe.
Okay. You can't say with my teacher so confidently after talking about holding hands and not have me pause.
I was holding hands with my teacher who was teaching me how to skate. You're the first hand I ever held and you know that. Well, you remember the first time we held hands and I broke two of your fingers because I bent them back with my two other fingers? And I was like, is this right? And you're like, no, the thumb doesn't move that much. And I was like, I'm just trying my best. Mm-hmm. And then I broke two of my own fingers. And we went to the hospital together.
Yeah.
And then we made love. You remember?
With your broken fingers?
I mean, they were involved.
Okay. Okay. I want to move on.
I do too.
Okay. So they ice skate and Nick lifts her up, to which Griffin says, this is dangerous.
I wish that was a bit. No. I wish that was a joke and not just like
Griffin fears for anybody doing anything like a little risky on this show.
Oh, what, like standing on two knives on the world's most slipperiest substance that if you fell on it you would bash your fucking brains in while holding another person? Like, yeah, that's bad. I don't like that at all. And they did it like 9 times.
They did. Well, you know how Nick loves to pick women up.
He's a lifter. He's a women lifter.
And then they lay on the ice and kiss. And then
just a lot of laying in different bodies of water and kissing this season for these two.
And they go and sit around a fire and they talk about the family and how good the experience was. And then Nick walks away and then just walks back and he's holding 3 puppies.
3 husky puppies. And like, all right, obviously this is, we're doing some prop comedy now, but fuck me, these puppies, y'all.
Raven tells the camera, this is the best day of my life.
It's the best day of my life too. Are you kidding me with these puppies?
She says, I hope my kids with Kick with Nick. I hope my kids with Nick are as cute as these puppies.
But less hairy.
But less hairy.
And then they
share some laughs together.
It's fun.
And this is when Griffin turns to me and says, I like this Nick.
I like Nick when he's with Raven. And it's maybe the only Nick that I liked this whole season. Or maybe it reminded me of the Nick I really liked during Bachelor in Paradise last season.
Yeah.
Where I think this, more than anything, sort of is evidence for yours and my sort of like thoughts on the boringness of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette once they make that leading role. And that once you hang the artifice of this show on a person, once you hang the, like, here's the beats you gotta hit. Around week 4, there's gotta be some big drama. You gotta make everybody doubt that you're gonna like stay at all. You gotta constantly be doubting that you're gonna find love no matter what. Fantasy suites have to be, you know, this and this and this and this has
happened. You've got to not reveal strong opinions about any women.
And that level of, like, duty just makes you fucking boring. Because at that point, you are playing to a script. At Bachelor in Paradise, like, Nick was fucking, like, kind of fun. And, like, a very, like, one of the best audience surrogates this franchise has ever had. And I was excited for that. I thought we were going to be taken behind the curtain a little bit more this season. And fuck me, did that not... Not only did that not happen, I think Nick was more in the, like, writer room than any bachelor or bachelorette ever has been before.
Well, and Raven does a good job of breaking through that just because, like, she, I don't know, just her personality. Like, later that night, they're in front of the fire again, because there's a lot of fire in Finland. And she says, you know, don't give me too many details, but how are you doing? And Nick very honestly says back to her, I can't move my neck. Like, he's just very open about how stressed he is, how tense he is. And it's like moments like that I thought we'd get more of this season.
But it's also moments like that that make you think, like, oh, this is not a judgment on Raven, and I hope it is not taken as such, but, like, she's his buddy.
Yeah.
She's his, like, and that doesn't, like, in no media, like, scripted or real or whatever, does the buddy sort of
come away with a big W. That drives me crazy.
I know, me too.
Because Griffin, we're buddies.
We're very good buddies. And we were good buddies for a bit before we dated. And
We didn't enter some kind of deadly, quote, friend zone.
No, well, that's fucking, you listen to any podcast, I think that's the dumbest shit fucking ever.
But I feel like Raven probably thinks that's what happened to her.
I know, but, and that's,
same with Alexis, too.
Yes. It sucks, right? But, like, That's not how it works, but it is how this overwrought romance show, once you think it works, which is just like the buddy is somebody you have fun with and they're funny and they're kind of a goofball and we get some good footage and we have some fun on the dangerous roller ice skating fun. But they're not the one that wins is the one that you cry with the most and the one that you have like the most sort of like deep philosophical differences with that you have to sort of figure out together. And that's not like, that's not always the case.
Or you can do both.
Or you can do both.
Hey, turns out you can do both.
It really breaks your heart though, because this whole time I'm watching like, oh God, I think I want Raven to win. Like, Vanessa's great, and I try not
Nick
to forget
seems
that.
Happy.
But Nick seems like, this is the happiest we see Nick. And it's not like I'm rooting for this dude's fucking happiness or whatever, but it's refreshing to watch somebody not be fucking boring.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not, I don't care that he's happy. He's entertaining. He's more entertaining. He's not fucking boring.
Yeah. Raven, I think, tries to do Nick the solid of saying, hey, just so you know, like, if you're going to propose to me, I want you to know I'm ready. Like, I do love you. Which she does say. And I just want you to know that if you were to take this chance, like, I'm going to say yes. And Nick says, you know, I've never worried about you. You've always been so sincere. Like, I don't have any doubts, you know, that if I were to pick you, I'd be happy.
And then we move on.
It's time for Neil Lane.
Well, yes, the next shot we see is Chris Harrison in an ancient Egyptian tomb collecting the 5 urns that contain the vital organs of Mr. Neil Lane. He gathers them up, combines them, forms just sort of a rough skeleton, which goes around terrorizing the town and absorbing the vitality of people.
He harnesses the power of the short hours of the sun in Finland.
He probably has figured out a way to eat diamonds for power, right? Like, at this point, it's probably the way that, like, he's definitely buttoning out.
So why would he give them up, though, if he needs them for power?
He has more than enough, because he also needs money, right?
Yeah.
It's one thing to be, you know, young and vibrant and vital, and the literal mummy, but, like, you also need that cash.
I will say something for Neil Lane. Like, Griffin and I thought he was going to razz Nick real hard, because this is literally the 4th time that he has sat down with Nick to pick out a ring. But he doesn't. He's just like, hey, everyone likes you. Everyone's rooting for you, Nick.
It's because he's putting his fucking kids through college. Are you kidding me?
That's true.
Yeah.
And he shows Nick some very big rings, including one that he says is the biggest ring he's ever done.
You razz me again, because every time I see these fucking rings, I'm sorry, folks, I will always jump on this grenade. I think some of these rings look fucking stupid. I think if you have a ring that, and this is a character that lots of people like to play on TV, of just like, are you sure you want a diamond that big? But I just think if there's diamonds on literally every square millimeter of the band and the setting, and there's little diamonds around the diamonds, and what's that? If you crack the small diamond open, it's like a wonder ball, and there's a million diamonds inside of the big diamond that just rattle around the whole time you walk around, and there's, when you wear it, you just get diamond dust all over your finger that you have to wash off for an hour every night. Like, I think these rings look fucking stupid.
And I told Griffin, it's like if somebody came up to you with this really nice piece of chocolate and said, do you want one piece of chocolate, or do you want 27 pieces of this great chocolate? Would you say, no, 27 pieces of chocolate is gaudy. Okay. I only want one.
If you had to wear those 27 pieces of chocolate on your hand?
No, it would be
scary. I think you would probably,
I would be nervous to walk down the street.
Well, I mean, yeah, there would be like a meltiness issue, but just like, I think it's gaudy, folks.
No, I mean, I'd be nervous to walk down the street with a very, very expensive
$1 billion ring.
Piece of jewelry.
The biggest
on
ring
me.
That Neil Lane, the mummy, has ever. Yeah.
I don't know if that's the one Nick picked, actually. I didn't notice that that was the one.
I mean, they're
picked.
All kind of. If you can't see the band, I want to see. Show me that band. A good ring, I think, is like a nice little thing of precious metal and then a gem. And there can be fun stuff around the gem or whatever, but like when the whole band is also gems. It just looks like fucking wadded up tinfoil. I think it looks stupid. And that's Griffin's jewel cutter's corner. Next week, join us as we discuss the merits of pillow cut versus princess cut.
Is pillow cut a thing?
We'll get to it.
Sorry. So now it's time. The ladies are in their dresses. Nick is holding the ring he has selected. And this is when Griffin and I realize there's not a lot of sun in Finland. We're probably not going to get that sunset tell.
Or I think there's actually a lot of sun in Finland.
No, there's only a few hours a day of sun, is what they said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or maybe you're right. Maybe it is the other way around. I don't remember. But either way,
we don't need the fucking sun to tell us who's going to win this one, though, because we have the entire season of The Bachelor to tell us who's going to win this one.
I know. So cars pull up, not a limo. Looks like a very sporty SUV
that can survive the elements and the bear attack.
Griffin, like, these things are always car commercials, but this one was especially with this car navigating through the snow. I was like, ooh, that's a good vehicle.
It was a Ford F-150 and it drove through the snow and it was just like, truck, yeah.
And so who gets out first of this very nice vehicle? It's Raven.
Yep.
So we know that she's not getting
So I popped into the comments at this point. I tried to stay off so I could like really watch the episode. And there was a lot of anger. And there were a lot of people who I didn't even think about this who were like, why is everyone so mad? And I was like, oh, my sweet ones.
I don't know.
Oh, my sweet ones. No,
The first one out always gets rejected,
always
guys.
Always loses. There were a lot of people who were saying, because they've built up this big historic twist, what if the first one out actually won this season? I was like, I really think about that. They can do that shit on Top Chef where it's like final two, the winner is this one, and then at the very end they get like 4 seconds of like, sorry Jamie, you didn't pull it out this time, maybe next time. You can't do that on The Bachelor where it's like, I love you, spend the rest of your life with me, but hold on, give me 10. hold my beer. Give me 10. I need to do something first. Please go wait for me in the plane. We will fly off and start our life together. Before we do, I need to break off my other relationship while we're still in.
They're like, oh, no, no. You know what? Actually, you can just stand here. Let me just knock this out real quick while you're standing here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Raven gives the speech that the people that don't win always have to give, where they talk about how much they care about the person. And she says something particularly heartbreaking. Where she said, you know, this is the kind of love that my dad prayed for me to have. And Nick at this point, he is a runny faucet.
He's looking everywhere but Ravenward.
He's just like, oh no, oh no, 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 please stop, please stop, oh no. And then Nick kind of recounts their dates and his first impression of Raven, and it all sounds very positive until he says, I have so much love for you. I just don't know if I'm in love. My heart's somewhere else. This morning, when I figured out where my heart was, and that's when Griffin and I were like, this morning?
This morning, when I made the heartbreaking decision, like, Jesus.
This morning, over my espresso and runny egg, I decided it's not you. And then Raven says something that should probably go on a t-shirt. She says, I'll never regret standing here telling you how I feel.
That's good stuff.
And Nick says, I'll miss you. And Raven says, I know.
Cool. That's cool, though.
And then she gets in the car.
And then we also get the sort of obligatory, like, am I just never going to find love?
Yeah, she says, what could I do differently? I don't even know if love is possible. Kind of the sad stuff you hear.
Yeah. I also think I very much enjoyed Raven on this season. I also think that there was a lot of posturing, I think, it's safe to say. And I think everybody who ever makes it this far in the show does this. So no judgment. But, like, posturing to try to be the next Bachelorette. And I think if Rachel wasn't on this season, Raven would be the next Bachelorette. But
yeah. Well, the producers, I think, really pushed her, too. Because a lot of the things she said were like, I am confident that Nick will pick me and that this is my last night as a single woman. And I can't wait till tomorrow.
Absolutely.
When I'm engaged.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just also think that it was built up for maximum devastation. And that's the redemption arc that they try to give the Bachelorette.
Yeah.
Although I think Rachel is going to be way better.
Yeah.
At this than Raven was. Because I enjoyed Raven, but I think we've seen, like,
yeah, Raven comes in like a lot of the women on this show have come in. Okay, so it's time to propose to Vanessa. And this is when Nick says that he's been falling in love with her for a long time and that he tried to fight it. But he says, I do love you. I am in love with you. So he's going for the hat trick. And Vanessa gives her speech second, which it's Griffin, like, usually the person who is potentially going to get the proposal goes first. But with the way they've set Vanessa up, they set Vanessa up like she might reject him. So they make Nick go first, and then they leave Vanessa to kind of give her speech.
It's oddly, like, kind of empowering. Like, this has literally never happened.
Yeah, it is a little bit like Nick is proposing, but she could say no, and she very may well say no for the first time ever. But she doesn't. She says yes. And she says, Nick, when I'm with you, I'm the happiest I've ever been, which she didn't really seem that happy to me.
Yeah. Sort of the last few episodes, we just thought, well, no, they had fun. Like, they had a lot of fun on the ice bath date. And, like, they did have fun. But I think this is us reacting to the edit of this episode, which is just like, here's a woman who is unsure of their relationship and they cry together all the time versus, like, somebody who roller skates or ice skates and laughs and does dangerous Yuri on ice stunts out there.
So he proposes, she says yes, and then they get whisked away by a woman with a horse carriage, and
Vanessa does a really good just like cheesing it for the so we also had to rewind it to check on this, because they hug and kiss and he says, are you ready to start the rest of our lives together? And she says, yeah, kiss, let's kiss, do it, kiss, literally.
Yeah.
Which I thought they were talking about coitus, and that was very cool. And then they walk off, and she, like, leans into, like, do, like, a fucking, like, Bugs Bunny, like, hey! that I was very, very into.
That was fun.
I'm happy for them. This is another tragic thing about the way that this fucking show is edited to present this very specific story. I like Vanessa a lot, and I have since the very beginning, but since it started to become kind of evident that she was going to win this show, she began to get an edit that did not maximize my enjoyment of Vanessa. In fact, it did everything to, like, make it seem like their relationship was not healthy or fun or good, and that everybody else's relationship was way more fun and healthy.
Yeah, which, and so, like, I get why they do that. Like, they don't want you to get so invested in Vanessa that you don't care about any of the other women.
Which is fine. That is a problem. Because that's so many seasons have fallen on that pitfall. Like, why the fuck are we even watching this? Whitney's going to win. Duh.
But they didn't do that with, like, Sean and Catherine, right?
Did they? Well, Sean and Catherine's season was such a... That's one that I actually want to go back and rewatch, because that's one bizarre outlier where Catherine, I don't think anybody thought was a front runner until it got to the final two, and it was like, holy fucking shit, I think this woman's gonna win this thing. And I love, you know, they're one of my favorite couples to come out of this monster.
Although Sean's been kind of gross
on Twitter. Sean's fallen off the fucking,
he's been a little gross on Twitter.
But, like, Catherine came out of nowhere, and it didn't happen until, like, the final two, and that is something that I feel like this show's tried to replicate a few times, but I don't think that was they're married still, and, like, not a lot of couples that come out of the show can say that, and so that makes me think that, like, her, like, kind of surprise victory didn't come down to the edit or whatever, like, it was spontaneous, and it actually happened, and it was, like, very real, for lack of a better term. And that's not to say that Vanessa and Nick's thing wasn't real, although I'm saying that, and once we get past the Jumbotron spots and we watch this after the Final Rose, who the fuck knows? It's just that, like, I don't know. I don't know how to fix it. Because the two options are either you know who the person is going to win the whole time, and they don't do this edit to make that person seem less great with this other person than they are, or doing that and saying, like, ooh, you're still sure about Vanessa? What about now? How about now? Now do you think Vanessa's going to win? Oops, she won. Got you. Like, I don't think either of those are exactly perfect solutions.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's tricky. I don't know that I could do it better.
Yeah. But that was the season. How do you feel about Nick coming out of this?
You know, I thought it was interesting. Somebody in the Facebook group posted and said, I don't understand why Rachel and Griffin are so down on Nick. Nick seems like a pretty okay guy to me. And I think that's true.
I think Nick's okay.
I think he's an okay guy.
Yeah.
I think we give him a hard time because he has this kind of, like, shrug quality is the only word I can think of. Like, he just has this kind of, like, oh, who, me? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
He's, like, very coy. My bigger thing with Nick is, it's that chronic disappointment I have with, and I'm already worried about Rachel. Like, I really like Nick and Bachelor in Paradise. Go back and listen and to us talk about, like, I think at some point we even said, like, how great would it be if they brought Nick back? As they didn't pick any of the chumps from JoJo's season. They brought Nick back as the Bachelor. How cool would that be? And we were so excited because he was this audience surrogate, and he was, during BIP, like, funny, and he was very charismatic, and he was very, like, very kind, I feel like, to, like, a lot of the people. Like, I remember the twins going through some stuff.
Yeah, and he seemed, like, willing to be a friend.
Yeah, and so, like, those were not traits that you see triumphed very much in this show. And so, like, I thought, like, wow, this could be something really special. And they also have an opportunity here where, like, we know more about Nick than we know about anybody who's ever been on this show fucking ever. And so they don't have to, like, spend all this time, like, building the lore or whatever. We, like, know who this dude is. And I don't know. I just don't think we got... I don't think anything interesting came out of
that. I think we just always wanted more from Nick. Maybe because we had higher expectations for him. But I just would watch every episode and think, like, oh, I was hoping you'd be a little better. Not to say he wasn't great, and there were a lot of good things about him, but I just always wanted a little bit more.
And for me, the biggest thing is just, like, I really feel like it was, like, The Bachelor, created by Mike Fleiser, whoever, co-executive produced by Nick Vile. Like, I really, really feel like every decision that he made and that the show made, like, I could not shake the feeling that he was extremely involved.
Because the show kept reminding us, like, Chris Harrison kept reminding us, all the advertisements kept reminding us, and Nick kept saying, I've been here before. So it was like, you almost got this constant reminder of, like, hey, Nick's a pro at this. Like, Nick knows what he's doing. Like, Nick's been in this situation before. And so you start watching thinking, like, this is like an all-star game, and Nick's coming back and playing his old position.
The thing that's great about this show is this balance between the bullshit that can be fun to watch. I like dissecting the structure of it. I like dissecting, like, oh, that's who they've got filling in this constant archetype. Let's see how they do, and let's see if it's successful for them this time. And I like the goofy ass shit that results from, like, the frankly pretty wild structure of this show that I didn't appreciate until we went back and watched the very first season, where it was like, this person's gonna date all these other people. Isn't that wild? And it's like, oh yeah, I guess so. I guess I've kind of lost the novelty of it. There, what works about the show is when that, like, silliness and, like, Bachelor Nation side of it is balanced out by my belief that this is a person that is trying to find a romantic relationship, and when they find their partner, it's like, oh, that's really, I'm rooting for them. You have to be rooting for the romance in order for it to really work. You really, really, really do. And I don't think this season did a good job of that second thing at all.
That's true, because so much of the narrative was like, is he going to find love?
All of it felt like the first category of just like, he's been on the show before. So is he going to do this thing that's happened in every season? Or is he going to do this thing that didn't happen the past three seasons? But what if this thing that's never happened in any season, unprecedented television event? And it's like, is this guy dating people? Is this guy going on dates with people? Like, they didn't pay any attention to that part of it at all. And as jaded as I sound about this show sometimes, like, I need that. I need that.
Yeah.
We got that in huge doses from Tara's House, where, like, I was rooting for the relationships that happened on that show harder than I've ever rooted for any relationship on any reality show ever. And that was so refreshing. And this show can do that. It just chose not to.
Well, because Nick's whole approach was like, I'm going to be more careful this time. Like, guys, I know I've been in love several times and you've seen it, but this time I'm going to be more careful. And it was like, and it made it less fun.
Maybe with Nick, we could never get that. Maybe with Nick, who has done this show so many times and is a seasoned veteran, and he talks about, I don't want to make the mistakes I've made the past few times. What's interesting is when people make those mistakes. Like, it can be interesting when people make those mistakes and let themselves be vulnerable in the way that you refuse to let yourself be vulnerable. But, I mean, that's also giving Nick a lot of credit. Like, I still just think the dude was just trying to make a season of television. Yeah. And I cannot get past that at all. I think he was fine. I don't think he was, like, an awful dude. And he's certainly not one of the worst dudes that's ever been on this show.
Well, let's wait till after the final
roast.
That
being said, who the fuck knows, again.
Hey, Griffin.
Yeah.
Can I steal you away?
Jump, 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 jump. Can I tell you about Blue Apron?
Yes, please.
It's a thing we use. I use it all the time. I cooked for you last night. How do you not even know about Blue Apron?
I didn't say that I didn't.
Y'all, last night, I made this Moroccan chicken with this like tomato based sauce that had prunes and what else was in that sauce? Garlic and I feel like there's some sort of chopped nut or something that was in there. Holy shit. It was really, really good. And brown rice and like, seared chicken. Man. I just fucking love Blue Apron so much. For $10 per person, less than $10 per person per meal, they provide seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals, like this badass fucking Moroccan chicken that I made. They also have salmon piccata and orzo with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips. It's really, really good. This was a fucking good week for Blue Apron. What else did we have? I feel like we had, I feel like we had a lot of really good stuff.
Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah. They sent meatloaf. And I told Rachel, like, I'll cook this, but I've literally never eaten meatloaf that I've liked before in my life. And this was really, really good stuff. Anyway, you can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/rose. And we do it. We've done it for a really long time now, and it's, I can't imagine not having it. It's really, really fucking great. Again, blueapron.com/rose. Go check it out.
Hey, Griffin.
Yas.
Can I tell you about Try the World?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
So this is a snack service that we got, and I had never had it before.
You had not tried the world. You'd only tried St. Louis, and you tried Chicago, and you tried Austin.
That's very true. And what's cool about Try the World is that every country, every culture is unique, and food is one of their favorite ways to explore that uniqueness. So Try the World brings you 5 all-natural healthy snacks from 5 different countries. The snacks that we got to sample were all kind of vegetable based. So I was able to eat all of them, which was exciting for me. And if you go to trytheworld.com, you can get $10 off your next box of healthy snacks with code ROSEBUDDIES.
Thanks, Try the World. I think we will. We don't get to travel so much anymore. It's mine and Rachel's like favorite thing to do is to travel, and we don't get to do that anymore. So instead, we bring the world to us in this little flavorful box.
Yeah, we got a lot of Asian-themed snacks, which, as you may know, Griffin and I have
big fans.
Have done some traveling in that region.
That whole region.
Yeah.
I got a Jumbotron here. If you want to get a Jumbotron on the show, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. I'm pretty sure they're sold out through July.
Yeah.
So act now, I guess. Here's a message for Sam, and it's from Sean, who says, "This podcast of love seemed the perfect way to say that the past 3 years have been the best of my life. Happy anniversary." And this is, they want it close to March 25th, which I think is pretty close. We're close-ish.
Yeah, it's the
13th. We could be closer, but this is close-ish. We're actually a little early. So happy early anniversary. Sit on this episode and go back and re-listen to it. That can be a fun anniversary day sort of thing. I hope it's more romantic than mine and Rachel's last anniversary, which, babe, I don't even remember because we had a, like, 10-day-old boy at that point.
I think we got sushi delivered to us.
Yeah, that you had to eat without soy sauce, maybe?
No, at that point I didn't
know. Oh, we didn't know that our boy could... Yeah, so you were just filling your body with poison.
Oh.
It was a great anniversary, though. We've definitely had better, though, when we could like, go and do things.
Yeah.
It was just exciting. Remember, we had a little new boy. Mm-hmm. We were so scared. Just so scared all the time. Do you want to read the other one?
This message is for Rick Accused Way.
Oh, boy.
From Becky Doc Tickets Way. Happy birthday, Rick. It's me, Doc Tickets. There are 2,000 jokes I could talk about here, but I'll just say that you're the best friend, ice cream creator, and brother a girl could ask for. You're a wonderful human and a beacon of light in the darkness. This is your year. Love your sister. P.S. Grandma loves you too.
That's maybe the best message I've ever heard on this show. Every sentence of it was like poetry to me.
Doc Tickets.
Doc Tickets makes ice cream, is a good brother, and his grandma loves him very much. It's all... That message was like an episode of the Torkelsons, like in a little like... I loved it so much. I also... You know what else I love?
What?
The Max Fun Drive.
Bow, 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 bow.
What? This is unprecedented.
I don't know. I thought it needed its own stinger.
It was the same stinger. It's not its own stinger.
Well, but it's got Rachel flavor.
So mark your calendars, because the 2017 Max Fun Drive is coming up. Starting March 20th, that is next week, we're going to be running some of the best shows of the year, offering amazing thank you gifts for the new and upgrading members, celebrating friendship with a global Max Fun meetup day, and more. It's the single best time to become a member or increase your support for our new, for our favorite Max Fun shows. For your favorite Max Fun shows, like Rose Buddies. Took me some time to get through that, but I mean, this is also my favorite show. Don't tell the boys.
No.
The drive starts on March 20th, and it lasts for just 2 weeks. If you've been holding off on becoming a member, the Max Fun Drive is your time to share. Tune in and visit MaximumFun.org for details. So, broad strokes. You can help us. You can help us. You can help. You can become a member. When you become a member, you tell them what shows that you like. And if it is Rose Buddy's first year on the Max Fun Network, so like if we brought you to Max Fun and you like what we do and you want to support us, this is how you do it. And whatever you can give is great. It's awesome. You get to donate and you get to help us out. And like Rachel and I are sitting in this room right now recording this podcast for the Max Fun Network, which has helped us reach a way bigger audience. Like because of y'all, like I've become basically a full-time podcaster, along with the Polygon stuff I do because of the support that folks have given us. So if you like the things that we make, like you are the ones who made that possible.
Yeah. That's the way I always think about it. Like anytime I'm approached with an opportunity to give to, you know, an organization or a cause or a product that I really believe in, I just think like, When you give to something like that, you're kind of a partial owner in its continued existence. And I think that's kind of neat, and yeah. That's powerful. And we have such a good community with Rose Buddies.
Definitely.
And so
it's the best community, like,
you know,
in the world. And like,
do whatever you feel comfortable doing.
Yeah. And you can really draw a straight line from like that first Max Fun Drive we did when Mabim Bam first joined the network to where we are with like all the stuff that we do. And people ask like, how can you do so much stuff? And it's like, well, we can make a living doing it, and we can like be supported doing it, and that's all y'all. So it really helps us
out.
So
Rose Buddies TV show.
For the Rose Buddies TV show.
2021.
That'd be weird. Like, well, I mean, fuck it. We could be the new after show. Although I do not know that they would let somebody quite as critical of their product. No. Like, that fucking episode was boring. Anyway, it's coming up next week, and if you donate, you get cool gifts, and we have a bonus episode that's gonna knock your fucking
butt. Yeah, we've already recorded it. We were nervous to talk too much about it because we hadn't recorded it, but
we'll tell you what it is next. We'll tell you what it is next week when you can donate and go listen to it.
But it is in the can.
It's in the can.
We are excited to share it with you.
Fuck me, it's so good. Let's go watch what this dumb twist is gonna be.
Okay.
All right. Some exciting developments.
Yeah, there was some historic stuff.
There was actually, okay, they did it. They got us there at the end. They actually did some stuff that was, first, I think you could consider historic.
Let's get the boring stuff out of the way.
I took a fucking page and a half of notes and just like nothing happened. So I'm just going to burn through it. Nick comes out first. There's a lot of, like, I think the only interesting thing that like, the only interesting sort of like conversation topic that had not been run completely into the fucking ground at this point was Nick talking about how at this point, now that he's past it, him and Vanessa are still together, but that he says he sympathizes with Raven because he's been the runner up so many times. And I bring that up. Raven comes out, but I bring that up because later on Vanessa comes out and is talking about how she kind of feels like that had been an issue, that like he was so sympathetic towards Raven because she was this runner up that he was not like focusing on his excitement now that like the process is over and that they are still together and can plan this life together now that like the big secret is out.
Yeah, she suggests that like because he himself has been the runner up so many times that he like actually can relate to Raven more.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of Raven comes out first though, and there's a lot of Nick talking about being in Raven's position, which is sort of par for the course. Chris talks about how Raven was very stoic while she was losing, while she was getting the boot, and Raven said that's just kind of how she processed it.
Yeah, she seemed really like oddly apologetic because of the way Chris had phrased it, and Nick's like, I totally get it. Like, yeah. I didn't think that was weird.
She talks about how she was really confident that she was going to win, the day of, because she kind of had to be, but she was very gracious about, Nick and Vanessa. And then this segment ends, most notably, with Chris saying, so Raven, what's next? And she says, well, I'm always looking for love. And Chris says, well, you know, I've got a place.
Yeah.
And I have an island where experiments are conducted. She gets the BIP call up. He kind of flirts with it, and she kind of flirts with it, and Chris is like, no, Raven's going to be on Bachelor in Paradise. So
yeah,
that's good. That's somebody who's going to sort of counterbalance some of the more unsavory elements that are going to be on Bachelor in Paradise.
I hope so.
Vanessa comes out next, and it's just her for a while. There's kind of some gross stuff, I feel like, in this section of, like, Chris treating Vanessa like she was a real burden this season, a real difficult lady.
Yeah, there's this, like, it's this thing that started to appear halfway through the season of, like, oh, Vanessa's so passionate and strong-willed, and that can cause real problems in a relationship. And Chris tries to kind of, like, pick up that ball and run with it.
Reed's gross, though, because she says, I feel like I'm not the easiest person to be with. And Chris says, what? No. And it's like, that's not a good look, I don't think, at all. Chris talks about how she was a tough sell on this process. And she says, and I thought this was buck wild and also probably not true, that she had never watched a whole season of this show before coming on, which I don't even know how that happens.
I bet that is true.
Really?
She's Canadian. I mean, it's probably not as easy for her to get her hands on
it. If you get cast on a TV show, or even if you're trying to get cast on a TV show, you probably watch some of that fucking TV show. She says a whole season, so maybe she, like, dabbled and watched some of it. Yeah,
maybe she, like, picked up a few episodes.
I can't imagine. It's unimaginable. I cannot imagine this.
Well, like, that's because we've watched so many seasons now.
That's a good point. Fine. That they still live in two different countries. She's still in Canada, and he's still in, to use his words, the good old US of A. Speaking of not watching, she says that, cause Chris brings up the fantasy suites, and he teased at the very top of the thing, like, what really happened in Raven's fantasy suite? That's not a thing that they talk about. They never talk about her orgasm. Vanessa says she didn't watch the other fantasy suites. She just watched her own. I don't know what kind of iron willpower you would need to actually pull that off. And also what good, like, DVRing you would need. You probably need a friend to, like, steer the DVR for you. And how things were, like, it was an uncomfortable transition from being on the show.
She says, like any couple, we have some good days and some bad days. And they do this sometimes in the After the Final Rose of, like, alluding to how hard it is to be a couple, after you do this. But there's always this kind of, like, sadness to it.
It's very sad.
Yeah, because she was just like, yeah, you know, we've had some arguments, you know, we've had some serious conversations, you know, we're both unlikely to brush anything under the rug.
I'm fine to, like, not read too much into that. One thing she did say is that when they left the show, they nearly forgot to exchange numbers as they were leaving, which is like, wow, really?
That is kind of weird.
That's kind of weird, right? Like, that hit me as weird. And maybe she kind of said it as, like, a fun, like, isn't this weird? We almost forgot to stay in contact with each other at all. Like, it was fucking, like, before sunrise or something. There was a lot of sort of middle of the road. I always get uncomfortable talking about, like, are they really in love or not? But, like,
it's just uncomfortable to watch.
So much discussion about, like, you know, we have fights just like any other couple. And it's like, they talk mostly about that. And it's like, what's good? Like, what's good? What's good going on?
They also talk about how they haven't set a date for marriage.
Yeah, she says, Chris asks when they're going to get married. She says, we're taking baby steps. Chris says, do you know which country you're going to live in? Nick says, we're leaning towards the good old US of A, but that they have to go through the proper channels, to which Chris quips, it's not that easy. It's not as easy as it used to be. And Vanessa mentions that she is building a nonprofit for people with learning disabilities here in the States, so she can kind of bring her, like, what she was doing in Montreal, her career there, here to the States. And they talk about Nick's new career, which is Dancing with the Stars boy, and they talk about how they talked about it, and they settled on how, like, it's not like he's going to be a full-time dancer boy or whatever. And then Chris asks, do you feel like you're a team? And Nick says, absolutely. And then there's a pause, and he gives a little air kiss towards her, which she returns, and fuck me, was it awkward. there's a lot of, like, also at this point talking, and good job with the ring, boy. That's a good ring, boy. Like, Neil Lane. He does good work. Ooh, boy, this is uncomfortable.
You know what I think? I bet producers kind of love this show because I bet they think, yeah, you're uncomfortable, aren't you, audience? This is how you'd be all the time if we weren't there. Like, you're really missing us right now, aren't you, audience? Like, if we were there, you wouldn't have this uncomfortable. Yeah.
It's just like, I don't want to cast judgment on their love or whatever, but I've watched a lot of these now. I watched a lot of these after the final rose sections, and, like, this was not the most jubilant.
You know, but I'll say that Nick and Vanessa didn't seem especially jubilant towards the end of the season either.
It's fair.
Like, they're a serious pair.
And I also want to say that the process that they put them through after this show of being sequestered sounds so brutal, so nightmarish, and so unfair to a new relationship that, like, it is kind of hard to judge them on this.
Vanessa says at one point, because they always do that, like, what are you looking forward to? And they always say, like, oh, just be normal. Vanessa sadly says, I just want to be able to ride in the same car as him. And it's just like, oh.
Riding cars with boys, I get it.
Yeah.
Rachel comes out next, and this is where we're supposed to get the big historic thing. Yeah. They talk for a little bit. One thing that stood out is Chris asked what she saw in Nick's season that she kind of, like, wanted to carry over. She says she loved how direct and matter of fact Nick was, which he was fairly, I would say.
Yeah.
Direct and matter of fact. And that she wants to bring that, this is my words, that axe woman heat. She says that she's shocked at the support she's getting. Which, like, I don't know, maybe when you're in it, that makes sense, but she says she's excited to meet the guys, but nervous about how bad her feet are going to hurt. And this is where we get the big twist, where Chris is like, oh, you're excited to meet the guys? Well, let's get started right now. And the audience loses its mind, and Rachel gets real, real freaked out, and
they roll out, like, a big backdrop that looks like the Bachelor Mansion.
And they do a very quick handful of boys.
They bring out four real contestants.
Four real
right
boys
there
that
on the
come
spot.
Out.
Your starting lineup, ladies and gentlemen.
Your starting lineup. And I talked to, like, is this an unfair advantage? It's very exciting. I was fucking psyched. Because I was not expecting this soon. And
I didn't think they were going to let them introduce themselves. I thought they would just parade them out. She would look them over, and then they'd say, all right, America, get ready.
No.
But they do the
they
full
do full
on
limo
intro.
Exit. So the first out of the door is DeMario, who steps out, and he says that she doesn't need to meet any more guys tonight.
Yeah.
That they can fly to Vegas tonight and elope.
He's got a ring
and
already.
And he pops a ring out. And
he's got two plane tickets.
Two plane tickets to Vegas. And it's a decent prop comedy.
Yeah.
You'd need decent prop comedy to, like, pull this new unprecedented after the final rose limo exit off.
Yeah, you need something to hold on to.
DeMario comes out the gate strong. Cannot say the exact same for Blake.
Oh, Blake.
Rachel's, this is the first time I saw Rachel's skeleton poking out her mouth.
It reminded me of having contractions while I was in labor.
Oh my God, Blake!
Because I just felt like, when is it going to be over? Tell me when it's going to be over. Please make it stop.
Blake is just, Blake.
He's not prepared.
She goes in, he stands close to her, and she's like, no, give me a hug. And he, like, tries to transition his handshake into a kiss of the hand. And the fucking train skips the tracks right there and never gets back on.
The studio audience is still there. The studio audience is reacting to this, and it's like, oh God, you can feel the awkwardness.
They're trying to hear what Blake is saying, but Blake is a quiet and soft boy, and you can't hear him, which is probably for the best, because
and
he definitely says, you look good, you smell good. Blake, you can't. I'm here.
He stands next to her and puts his arm around her. He's like, take pictures, guys. And then he, like, doesn't know how to leave the stage. Because, like, after you introduce yourself, typically you'd go into the mansion for the cocktail party. But he just has to walk off the stage, and he, like, doesn't know how to do it.
Blake, you made my wife Rachel very uncomfortable.
Oh God, it was
and I'll
awful.
Never like you seriously head and hands in a way that I usually
and
get.
Then right after that, Chris Harrison comes out and he's like, how's it going? This is great. You want to meet some more? And she's like, I don't know, we could maybe stop.
Please, after Blake. Are there more Blakes? Can you give me a no Blake guarantee or
And I'm just thinking, like, how many more are there?
Oh, well, let me tell you all about Dean.
Luckily, there's only two
Dean,
more.
Dean, the sequel to Blake, comes out with a performance where he just straight out the fucking gate, what's up? I'm Dean. I'm ready to go black, and I'm never going to go back.
Dean.
And Rachel's a good sport about it, but Dean, you fucking can't, because I'm right here, Dean Griffin watching. Can't do it now with you. This, no.
You know what worries me about Dean's little line? I am so worried. There are going to be like five more white guys that are going to say that same thing.
The only thing I can say about Dean, and I'm not going to be the fucking first up to bat for the Dean Defense Force, but if Dean was put up as a sacrificial lamb to say this bad
thing,
have
it be done,
and just we're done with it, and now the other boys see this and they're like, back to the old drawing board. Good, boys. Good. Go back to that drawing board. Throw the first drawing board in the fucking dumpster. You idiots.
That was awful.
And Rachel's like, oh, that's fun. And that's like, that's about it for Dean.
Can we, because you're really confusing me when you keep talking about Rachel, can we figure out a way to
I think you might have to change your name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We'll figure it out. So Dean leaves the stage, and then we get Eric, and Eric's thing is like
saves the
day, because we just had two stinkeroos, and Eric comes out and he says, I'm from Baltimore, you're from Texas, but we're here right now. This is a miracle season. And just like says some really sweet stuff. And he's like, how are you doing? She's like, I'm doing great. That was all really, really good. And he goes, hey. And she goes, hey. And they start dancing. And she was like laughing while they just started like fucking dancing out of nowhere.
He's like celebrating that it went well.
Yeah.
And then she starts to dance with him. And it's just so nice. And it just made me think like, okay, I can deal.
And maybe this would have been more innocuous if it was just like any other limo exit. But the fact that there was a live audience, and maybe this live audience was just fucking relieved to be through the fucking Blake Dean desert, fucking Blake Dean Canyon, the just like dried cow bones, just like whitening in the sun. And then we come across the Eric Oasis. It was so fucking great. And I left this whole experience just like overjoyed. And then Chris comes out and sort of walks us out, and Rachel is also like really funny in that interaction where she's just like, why are you dancing? I don't know, but it's very, very good. And I like it very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's all we get until her season starts, I guess.
I'm really excited. And, I just hope, here's my one wish. I'm gonna put it out there, secret style, put it in my fucking vision board. I just want Rachel to stay fun. Like, I just want Rachel to not sort of like lose herself in the like the process of it, like every other like starring. I think the only person, I think the best person who I've seen like kind of rise above the demands of the show was Emily. And she may have been the last one that like, because she's the one who had the twist ending, and she's the one who like sort of broke from structure a lot and was really interesting, like entertaining in that regard. So I'm hoping Rachel can do that too. And put together a really good season. So that's in what? May?
Yeah.
Probably?
Probably May.
We got some time to kill.
Yeah.
Been talking about some stuff. I don't know that we know what we're going to do for next week's episode yet, but we will definitely announce it in the group. We'll figure it out soon. Been talking about Terrace House Aloha Stay, although I kind of want to wait for new episodes of that to pop up in April.
Yeah. Are You the One is just wrapping up.
Are You the One wraps up this week, so we could talk about this most recent season.
I want to watch first season of Bachelorette.
With Trista?
Yeah, it's on abc.com, I think.
That would be fun. Boy, you're sleepy, huh?
Yes.
It's 11:17, so this is the latest you've stayed up in quite some time, I think.
Yes, it is.
Thanks, Bachelor. You've killed my wife. That's it. Thank you all so much for sticking with us for this season. A lot of people joined us for the first time this season as we joined the Max Fun Network, and I just wanted to like hear us talk about this season of this TV show as they started watching. And so thank you all for coming along on this journey.
And hey, stick with us, because a lot of people's favorite episodes of our show are the kind of the what we call Rose Buddies with Z's.
It's where we talk about good TV shows.
Well, or just like novel, fun things we find on YouTube.
Yeah. Like Please Marry My Boy.
Yeah.
And if You Were the One, it's a very confusing. We got very conceptual there during Rose Buddies.
And Flavor of Love.
That's next week. We'll figure it out, and we'll try to stay a little bit more ahead of it than we are now. And also next week, Max Fun Drive kicks off. So we'll let you know all about that and what you can do to help us out and what you can get for yourself and the cool, cool bonus episode we have coming up and a lot of fun stuff on the horizon. So stay with us. And thanks to MaximumFun.org for having us. You can go to MaximumFun.org and check out all the great podcasts there today and go enjoy. Anything else?
That's it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching the show with me, babe. It was fun.
It was a fun season.
Yeah.
A lot of good ladies.
A lot of great ladies. The best cast, maybe, like, ever.
Yeah.
And so that's it. Till next time, I'm Griffin McElroy.
I'm Rachel McElroy.
When you're ready.
Stay with us on this journey of joy.
Spoiler alert.
She ends up with Soulja Boy.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Maximum Fun has asked us to make a new promo, and I think the best way to do it is to tell people what our show's about.
Oh, that's pretty easy. The Greatest Generation is a hybrid podcast that guarantees you a good night's sleep with a combination of both latex foam and memory foam.
No, it's actually a show that allows you to skip the post office by printing out your own postage.
No, it is a podcast that allows you to design websites by using award-winning templates.
Ben, it is most definitely not that. The Greatest Generation is a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast.
New episodes come out every week on Maximum Fun or wherever you download podcasts.